Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solari Report. This one is so important, we're going to make it public for everyone. And I would like to introduce you to a very special person. I've been following his work for years. His name is Jerry Day. He's a media producer, an entrepreneur, and an incredible freedom fighter. He said activist. I say no, freedom fighter. As I said, I've been watching his work for years. And every time I would go to your website or I'd watch a video, I would always have this expression. So when somebody says your name, I always hear this expression in my mind, I love this guy. And that's because you can tell from, you've had a very successful career as a producer, as an entrepreneur. You're a man who takes responsibility. You see a problem and you say, I can fix this. And you go to work. But the other thing you do, which is really special, is you are very inventive about holding other people responsible. And I think we're coming into a situation where we're going to have to start holding our government representatives and business folk responsible for mm-hmm. what they are and are not doing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think I love the way you do it because it's so lawful.
I'm not a lawyer, but
no,
I've
no,
had
no.
enough bounce with the law to have some sense of how that works. And
right, but what you do is you inspire people to understand that they can understand the law and use it themselves.
Sure.
Right.
That's what people don't understand is that like the right. laws for the government or for corporations or for lawyers. No, it's for us and we can do exactly some of the right. things to them they're doing to us. And
right.
the real big wake up call, you know, just the example is the notice, you know, when you send, they have this uniform commercial code, which is contains the principle of acquiescence by silence.
Right.
And they created this so that they could entrap us into things if we were dumb enough to not respond, to
right.
not respond to an offer, to not respond to a notice. Then, oh, they say, we'll just make up this rule that we'll presume you to agree if you don't respond.
Right.
Holy cow. So they've got us all in these, you know, your bank sends you here's the new terms of your credit card. And it's not the new terms of your credit card. It's the new terms of your credit card if you don't respond in 30 days and you just accept it by your silence.
Right. Right.
So we can send them notices. And at the bottom of a lot of my notices, I say, you agree with all terms and conditions herein unless you respond with supported rebuttal within 30 days. And so
wow.
that should be on everything you send to them. And that's what they send to us. So
right.
that's how you do it.
Well, the reason I constantly say I love this guy is you leave the listener or anybody who reads your website or many of your suggestions with the belief that I can personally understand the law and I can personally take responsibility and I can do this.
Yeah.
So it's very, very empowering. Anyway, so first I just want to walk through your different websites so people know where yeah. to find you.
Right.
You've got Crime and Power. You've got Freedom Taker.
I don't have Crime and Power. That's a guy in Denmark. Horsguard, and we shared links, and he's a tremendous guy. He published a book called The Most Dangerous Book and transcribed 28 of my videos.
And, is that still available?
Oh, yes, along with Paul Craig Roberts and a number of other really amazing essay authors and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
The most dangerous book ever published by a publisher, Soren Korsgaard, K-O-R-S-G-A-R-D.
Oh, I have to get that.
And it's on Amazon. And uh-huh. it's a great resource because, you know, I tell people, you know, you have it on your shelf. You know, nobody can censor it. This is highly censored stuff.
Right.
And but that was, he was helping me with some web issues. You know, I'm getting a lot of censorship problems and various shadow banning problems. And
why is it that doesn't surprise me?
it's really crazy. I mean, I used to get 10 to 100,000 views per video. Now I struggle to get 2 to 10,000 and I can see them. I've seen my view counts go down on YouTube. I've seen that. And so they're messing with me. They, you know, you search for yeah. my exact video title and you don't get, you know, it doesn't come up in search results, that kind of stuff. They're heavily shadow banning me and a lot of people like me, as we know. I'm right. Lucky I haven't been censored. I was censored. I had a video censored the other day on vaccines. And I wrote them an appeal. And I said they had censored me because I didn't agree with World Health Organization on something. And I sent them an appeal. And I said, the World Health Organization is putting out false information, disinformation. And if you censor my video, you're personally liable for any deaths or injuries. And that means you, YouTube, you, Alphabet, you, Google, and whoever censored my video are all fully and separately liable for any deaths or injuries if you censor my video. Bang, went back up. And
really?
An anti-vax video is on my YouTube page, and they're censoring everything anti-vax, so it certainly surprised me, but it's there, and it's a good video, and it's getting a lot of views.
But, wow.
So the
liability worked.
Well, I don't know, you know, who knows right. what they're thinking. I might have just been talking to an algorithm, and it saw the word liability, or, right. you know, who knows? They don't talk to you. That's the thing. You don't have someone you can talk to, a human being, someone you can rationalize with, you know, and negotiate with. There's none of that. It's just like, here's your little box where you get to file your appeal. You get 500 words and we'll decide. And right. that's it. You know, so it's inhuman. It's robotic. It's technical. It's, you know, arm's length. So who knows what they're thinking.
And it's working as designed. So Freedom Taker is your lead website, yep. is that correct?
Should I share that now?
Yes, get the home page up.
Please do. Here we go, coming in. So this is, yeah, where you go. And the free download documents, I think, is what we want to talk about. And down here is the green box is vaccine documents. Now, these are right on the home page, and I'll explain these. We can kind of go through these one at a time and get a rough sense of what this is. This is also available over on, I just decided, here's my little vaccine section, and there's a page just for these. And so it's all right there. But it's the same thing either way, you know, homepage or the vaccine page, pretty much the same thing. The conditional acceptance is probably something we want to talk about. That,
okay.
That's... The concept of conditional acceptance is a little harder for people to get their hands around. They say, well, good grief, you know, I don't want to accept the vaccine. The whole idea is I'm refusing the vaccine. Why am I using a conditional acceptance? Well, conditional is the key word. What you're telling them is, well, when you enter into a negotiation, if you simply refuse, you're creating a contested situation. You're going adversarial, and it becomes a legal contest, and it goes into a whole different category. When you are not in conflict and you are not introducing adversarial conflict, then everything is fine and you're in this happy space. And the happy space says, I'm happy to accept your deadly vaccine if you will show me, number one, that it's safe and effective, number two, that it doesn't kill people, number three, that you are accepting full liability for whatever harm you cause with this vaccine. And that means you, the doctor, you, the nurse, you, the manufacturer, you, the distributor, you, the legislator who mandated vaccines, you. If you look at this document, let's see if we get this thing up. If I do a download link here, what it'll do is it will show me a file manager and ask me where on my computer it wants me to save this. So I can't click this and show you the document.
So I will tell you, I've read this document and I don't know a doctor or nurse who would sign it.
Exactly. And that's the point. It's what the document says in very, very clear and firm terms is that you are offering me something, which is a vaccine. You must admit that there are hazards, you must accept liability, and I have to be assured of its safety, and you need to assure that, and you need to put bond on that before we can move forward, and that's my conditional acceptance. In other words, you're putting conditions on it that you have every right to put on there.
Right.
Your conditions are, it has to be safe, you have to be liable for the harm you cause. These are reasonable requirements,
right?
And if you can meet all these things, now if you look at the document, it goes on and on and on. You know, there's a lot of things that they have to agree to and admit that are well-documented scientific facts that are not convenient realities for the vaccine industry. And right. so they have to stop the BS. You know, they have to say, okay, let's admit what this really is. I'm going to take responsibility for what I'm going to do to you when I jab this thing in your arm, and then we're okay. Well, yeah, you're right. No health professional, no vaccine manufacturer, no legislator, nobody will sign this, because it takes that. You know how they put the liability for vaccines on the taxpayer with right.
And the families.
Yeah, well, exactly, obviously. And so the idea is, you know, that's not right. That's not fair. The taxpayers did not invent the vaccine. The taxpayers did not insist that you administer the vaccines. The taxpayers had no party in that. And so taxpayers are not really the correct liable party. The correct liable right. party are the people who make and push and sell and administer vaccines. So right. so we have to get liability back where it belongs, and we have to get assurance of safety and efficacy, and that's something they can't do.
Right.
You know, there's good scientific literature that show that there may never have been any benefit to vaccines ever at all. And then you've got the additional problem. This is the new ones, the COVID, are not vaccines. They're
right.
mRNA genetic
modifiers. I don't know if you know this. They've changed the definition, apparently, in Merriam-Webster Dictionary to include mRNA
in
gene therapy.
as a vaccine. My understanding is if they call it a vaccine, then they qualify for the immunity. So they simply redefine the word vaccine in order to qualify themselves for immunity. And, you know, right. if I hit you in the head with a baseball bat and I call that a vaccine, I could be immune from that damage too. This
right.
is how ridiculous this is getting.
Right.
So this document has an extensive list of things that I agree to this and I understand this and I accept liability for that, blah, blah, blah. And then if you can go along with all that, you sign it. Oh, by the way, you have to have the manufacturer sign this. Oh, by the way, you have to have even, you know, distributors, clinics, whoever's involved, complicit in the administration of the vaccine or the therapy, whatever you call it, has to sign. And that if it's a mandated vaccination, it has to be then signed by the legislators, all of them, who presume to force us to accept medical treatments without our consent. That's illegal. Obviously,
right.
Nuremberg Codes, Geneva Convention. You can't vaccinate people without their consent. And then medical codes. You can't, you know, when you go to the doctor and the doctor says, I want to give you this shot, and you say, no, I don't want that shot, the doctor goes, okay, we won't give you the shot. They know they can't force medical treatment. Medical treatment has to be consensual. When you refuse it, it is that from that moment on illegal,
you know,
to provide it.
I don't know if you've seen, there's a new expression, consented. They say if they don't, if we can't mandate it, then we have to make sure they're all consented.
Oh, consenting is something you can do to someone else now so that they have consented to what you want to do. Is that the idea?
So they're trying to figure out traps where they can say that somebody consented.
Presumption of consent.
Well, it's really, you know, we'll take away your job unless you consent.
Right.
That's a consented.
Well, that's coercion. That's coercion.
Right.
And we deal with that in our documents. And
right.
so that conditional acceptance kind of covers that. I'll scroll down. We'll go on to the next one here. Refusal of vaccines. This is very hard language. It says, no, I'm not going to take this. And I have good reason. Here's the reasons. There's good explanations right here of what these documents do. So just to flat refuse, you know, there's some people that don't want to get into complication of the conditional acceptance, and they just want to say, no, I'm just going to send them a document that says, I'm on the record by certified mail. You've been on notice. These are harmful and dangerous, and I'm not going to do it, and you have no right to force me to do it. Answer that with a supported rebuttal in fact and law. Refusal of medical testing. So this is, people are talking about what's going to happen to you in certain cases when you get this 6-inch stick jammed up your nose. and actually touching your blood-brain barrier or whatever the heck they're doing up in there. You know, I've seen this administration of this test where you see the profile of the head and you know, the stick going in, and sometimes they show it going up, literally contacting the brain, lower brain surface. Right. Sometimes they show it going the other way, kind of going into the sinus area. They don't even have that really figured out what they're telling us they're actually doing. And obviously different people who are administering the test are doing it different ways. Obviously, right. Some, if there is a right way, some of them are not doing it the right way. And so you're taking a lot of risk with this test. There's reports about contamination on the test swabs and on and on and on. So refusal of medical testing, send them that, let them answer that. And again, these are all, you agree to my terms and conditions unless you show me supported rebuttal within 30 days. For employers who try and force or coerce vaccination, here you go. You know, if you don't get if you're going to get fired or laid off because you refuse your vaccination, you send this to them. Go and click that, download that document, take a look, and you would not want to be the employer receiving that, because right. just for threatening that, you are in serious deep trouble if someone wants to bring that to you. Vaccine injury table, and I wish I could show you this. This is fascinating. I went to the HRSA website. I got this right off of their website. This is the agency, the government agency, that will pay you for your vaccine injury or death. This is the government agency that took the liability off of the vaccine agencies and put it on the taxpayer. And they have a document, which you got to download here. This is an official government document. So this is the only one here. The other ones up here, I wrote. This one, HRSA wrote. And I'm going to see if I have that. Yeah, here they are. Can you see that, HRSA?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, this is .gov, HRSA.gov, Health Resources and Services Administration. And this is where you go when you or your loved one gets killed or injured from a vaccine. And that document that is on freedomtaker.com, that is downloaded from this website. Can you see that right now?
Yes, vaccine? I can.
Okay, yes. Good. This one is online. Vaccine injury table. Get a load of this. So here's what vaccines do. You name the vaccine. On the left column, name the vaccine. Whatever, all of these. We've got hundreds of them. All of them are here. Okay, great. With that vaccine, look at the next column. Here's the illness, disability, injury, or condition covered. So these are the common things that have happened, will happen, are expected to happen to you if you get this vaccine: anaphylaxis, brachial neuritis, shoulder injury, whatever. It goes down to death. You know, it's all listed here. So we have found, as a government agency, that these things do happen and are associated with these vaccines, and we will pay you if you have this incident or event. And it tells you in the right column the time frame you have to have it in. It looks like on this top one, for instance, you have to have your bad reaction within about 4 hours or from 2 to 28 days or whatever. If you can decipher this, they are telling you that if this vaccine does this to you in this time frame, you get money. And you go down through every one of these, and there's, you know, all of the sort of the mandated vaccines, all those ones that they say
you can't fathom why anybody would take any one of these.
Right. I mean, they're telling you what could happen to you, and they're telling you that they will compensate you. Now, telling you that you'll be compensated and actually receiving compensation are two different things.
Right.
And my understanding, what I hear, is that people who apply for these compensation remedies are almost always denied on the basis of something, you know, whether it's, oh, it wasn't quite in the 28-day field, or it wasn't really what we call anaphylaxis, it was really something else. You know, they'll dodge and cheat, and you'll wind up not getting your compensation. But even right. if you do get it, it's some poor taxpayer paying it. So this is absolutely
Well, but it's usually too little too late. I mean, it's right.
When you talk about wrongful death, I mean, how can they compensate really for that? But this is the document. You can download it either on my website or from the HRSA.gov website. And they tell you right here, you're looking for major trouble when you take a vaccine, and we know about it. And if it's the kind of trouble that we've seen before, we'll be happy to pay you for it if you can prove you're exactly eligible.
Can I show you one thing on the internet that was partially inspired by your vaccine forms? Yeah. Go to pandemic.solari.com and click on family form.
Okay. Do you see your Solari report covered
there
now?
Yes. So go in that blue navigation bar, you see where it says family form, click on English.
I don't see family form.
Yeah, it's right there.
Oh, I'm sorry. English. I'm sorry. I was looking the wrong thing. Yep.
Okay. So
yeah, I saw this on your Solari report.
Oh, you did? Okay. So
I mean, I didn't memorize.
So you helped inspire this. There were two things: healthcare proxy planning forms.
Yeah.
But the reason I got interested in vaccination was I was an investment advisor and just dealt with a lot of vaccine injury.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I discovered was that vaccine injury translated into financial bankruptcy and financial devastation. And so we had a whole bunch of subscribers who were struggling with family members who wanted to take the COVID-19 injection. And so I thought, well, how do I create a form that holds someone responsible if they're going to do something that could disable or kill themselves so that they don't bankrupt the family?
Yeah.
And so this was designed as a due diligence process to force the person who wanted to get the injection to take responsibility, not to bankrupt the whole family. Because, essentially it's a put to the family who hasn't agreed to assume this responsibility.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. Because, this completely dark, undiscussed subject of that I'm putting the whole family at risk by accepting this vaccine. That's
right.
That's brilliant.
I want to figure out is how to translate this back into a boomerang on the employers. So I've got to go back and look at your employer letter because, if an employer tries to mandate this or a vaccine passport without taking financial responsibility, or if their insurance packages don't take financial responsibility, we're back to putting everything unfairly on the family.
Right. And that's such an obvious thing. If you're going to force me to do something or insist that I do something, obviously you're taking on liability, and that needs to be put in writing, like you say, with a document that you're going to be creating better than I could for that. So I'll be looking for that and sharing that on my website as
well. So one of the reasons I wanted to get you on was I don't know if you've seen the rebuttal letter that Bhakti and a group of doctors for, I think it's COVID ethics, wrote to the EU health agency. What had happened was the AstraZeneca injection had been halted by 19 countries within the EU because so many people were dying or had adverse events. And then it was overridden by the EU. And they wrote a letter, they got a letter back, which they deemed insufficient. And then they wrote a rebuttal letter. And at the end, the last section was called notice. And it put them on notice that they were responsible under the Nuremberg Code for crimes against humanity unless they had acceptable answers to the questions. And it was really a notice of liability under the Nuremberg Code. And I said, I've got to get Jerry Day on the Solari report.
Well, they need more than answers. They need they need to accept liability. So they can't just say, there's nothing they can say this vaccine cannot possibly hurt you. There's no evidence that they could produce to say that. So we have a vaccine that does cause death, does cause injury, and somebody has to be liable. And the obvious liable party are the person forcing the administration of the vaccine, I would say.
Right. But it's not you, the head of the agency. It's you, John Smith or Betty Gray.
Who are receiving the vaccine?
No, I'm saying that people, government officials need to be personally liable.
Right. Right. The name of the office, not the title, not the agency, the individual.
Right.
Personally liable. Absolutely. And a notice of that and you have to say why you're not, and they can't. So that's
right.
Yeah, exactly.
And I also think the existence of that record notifying them means they can't say they didn't know.
Right, right. That's a key with all these documents. Is this, as I call the anti-BS factor? It's like we're not in la la land anymore. We're right here where things are real, and you know, right. and I know that you know, and you know that I know that you know. So yeah, that's what a notice document does. It puts everything in a certain context, and you know, to get out of that context, you have to prove your position. And of course, it's easy to put them in a context where it's impossible.
Can't prove.
For them to.
So I want to go back again and make sure everybody understands this 30 days terms and conditions. So the financial institutions, for example, will send you something saying we're changing your terms and conditions. And if we don't hear from you in 30 days, you therefore are deemed to accept. So you're doing the same thing. You're saying by you saying, you know, if you don't respond within 30 days, you are deemed hereby to accept.
Right. Right. Now, the courts look at this different ways. Like the court will say, Ms. Fitz, how many times did you send this notice? And you say, well, I just sent once, but I have certified mail. They said, just once? You only sent it once? Maybe that's something they could overlook. When you say I've sent it three times, the court turns to the other side and say, what's the matter with you? Can't you read your mail?
Right.
This is how courts behave. So you've got to, we have some information on freedomtaker.com about how to do these. There's a, where we really explain this in the notice of liability against the smart meter, where you send it three times and then you send a notice of default. And you say, this is three times. The third notice is the notice of default. And this is three times and you're now fully noticed. And no court that's reasonable will deny that. So you have these little special ways that the court can kind of reinterpret things. Like the court could say, you might write a letter and say, I'm not giving you 30 days. I'm only giving you 7 days because my uncle is dying of this or whatever. You know,
right.
There's a life and death thing going on right now. It's urgent. You have 7 days to get us some kind of answer to this. So it's not locked in stone that it's 30 days. Where we get the 30 days thing is that the courts generally accept a 30-day time period as reasonable. Usually they accept 21 days, but 30 days if you want to be, reasonable, extra reasonable. So you can put that in your document, 30 days. But if it's an urgent thing, you put 2 weeks, 1 week, whatever is reasonable relative to the urgency. So the court would have to say, yes, you should have moved on this. This looked urgent.
Now, have you thought any about how, if somebody made a mistake and did take a COVID-19 injection and they had an adverse event or were killed, is the post receipt of the injection, is there any way to start holding people accountable?
If you didn't notice them originally?
Yes.
Well, maybe and maybe not. I don't know. That'd be a question for an attorney, because there is that immunity protection.
Right.
So that's what the notice is intended to do, is to eliminate the immunity protection to go back to the liability of the actual responsible party. And
right.
And so obviously you'd have a more difficult time legally. I think that anyone who doesn't serve a notice like this, like we have at freedomtaker.com, is told, no, just call HRSA and do your immunity file for your award or whatever they call it. You know, file for your compensation for your death or injury, like we do at the taxpayer's expense, and go ahead and have fun with that. You know, years of bureaucratic hassle and maybe never receiving anything because you know, if somebody doesn't like your looks, they'll say, "Oh, I'm going to put this on the back shelf." And why don't you call us in 6 months and we'll give you an answer, you know, whatever.
So I know you've been, and people have been using these in connection with the EMF radiation and smart meters.
Yeah.
What has the experience been so far with state and local officials where these things are used?
Okay. First of all, I always tell people, they ask me that. They say, does this work? I say, I don't track people. I don't go back and call them. And
right.
I don't even know who downloads my documents. So,
right.
So here's what I can say is that I call these a lot of these insurance policies because there's no such thing as a document that will overcome a tyranny.
Right.
When you have when you have corrupt judges, when you have corrupt courts, you have corrupt attorneys, all kinds of problems. I've seen it over and over. You have to, you know, the court just, you know, that's the law today, Ms. Fitz, but, you know, I'm just going to do this other thing. You know, judges do that. And I've seen them do it to me. And I go, well, aren't you supposed to be administering law? And they go, yeah, but, you know, this is my court and this is going to be my law today. You know, so when you have that open-ended corruption, you can't rely on any document. And I like to say, when you send a contract, offer of contract to a criminal, and you get the criminal to sign, you don't have much of a contract.
Doesn't mean anything.
It's a criminal, right. You know. So they're going to do what they want. So that's a problem. Even if you're not in court, you know, you might be dealing with a criminal. And so, and I would say very clearly, there are a lot of criminals in government, and I know some of them, and I have hard black and white evidence to show that IRS person, you know, we are dealing with criminals, and just because you're in government does not mean you cannot be a criminal. And so getting back to the document, what the document does is it does provide you good insurance. It says, I did accuse you of this. You failed to deny it. You failed to rebut it. And so you are now, instead of this nebulous situation where you harmed me and, you know, if I didn't send you the notice, you harmed me and maybe I agreed to let you harm me. We don't know.
Right.
When I send you that notice and I say, I don't agree to be harmed by you, when you do harm me, you are now in gross negligence. And this is a legal term. You are now at fault. When you're in gross negligence, you lose unless the court is corrupt. You're done. And so your document that you sent them, your notice document, a simple notice document stating terms and conditions, puts you in an advantage later legally. It puts you in an advantage immediately. But it, again, you, corruption is the red herring. So you know, you've got this insurance policy, you've got this protection, and you know, it's just like if you had a gun and you're going to shoot the bad guy, you might shoot and miss, or, you know, he might have a bulletproof vest.
Right, but I also think if you can get, you know, in a county of 20,000, if 1,000 people write such a letter to the the health officer, it's going to make a huge impact.
A major impact. Any letter to a government agency or a elected official has an impact, and especially written letters. And when that written letter says very firmly, you're going to be personally liable for my injury or death, and you have 20,000 of those, if certain legal lawyers got a hold of that and said, you know, I have a guy who I can show is guilty and liable for 20,000 deaths, you know, the size of that legal action and the size of the award and the size of the lawyer's compensation would be fantastic. You know, be very hard to resist. Now, lawyers don't like to go up against power. They don't like to go up against the establishment. They certainly don't like to go up against the courts themselves. Depends on who you're going after.
I'm sympathetic because when I litigated with the Department of Justice, every lawyer I had was constantly threatened with disbarment.
Yeah.
It's a dirty game.
It's a very dirty game. And we've got to face that. And we have to really concentrate on looking for attorneys and lawyers and high integrity people to work with so that we can start to make a dent in that corruption. And they are out there.
Right. It's funny. I want to send you, I'm working now with one of my attorneys on a document. It's called Holding the Central Bankers Accountable. Going Direct is a Two-Way Street. Going Direct being the name of the plan that they voted on in 2019 to move forward with everything they're doing now. It's basically a radical reengineering of the financial system, and the vaccine passports are the, you know, the primary tool that they want to use to control financial transactions. So, but
what
it's all
about.
What
does going direct mean? Who is going direct with what?
So on August 22nd, 2019, The G7 central bankers went to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, which they do every year. They have a meeting there. And they voted on a plan which had been designed by a group of retired central bankers working through the BlackRock Investment Institute. And it was called Going Direct. And it was basically a radical plan to reset the global economy. It's the way I would describe it. And that was the beginning of the very process we're in now. Okay. And part of the heart of Going Direct is installing the smart grid and moving with, I think they're going to use as the core tool, the vaccine passport. It's basically a bank card system where any central banker can turn off your money directly from central headquarters.
Yeah, that we're going to see that. There's no question that any kind of digital currency, who was it? I saw an interview, somebody saying, oh, they could easily just cut the money supply in half. You know, right. your bank account one day would be worth half as much, or they could do it with inflationary effects as well. So your bank account will no longer be rigid at all. You will have other parties, you know, putting it on a major up and down scale. You know, you'll have to check your bank account every day to know what's in there,
and whether or not you've been good.
Yeah, and how your behavior has been.
Exactly. Right, it's kind of like Santa Claus.
Yeah.
You wake up in the morning and you've got switches and ashes.
Right. Or a bite out of the cookie and he drank the milk. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's going to be happening.
Well, they're going to try and get it to happen. I would like to think that we have a chance to stop it.
Well, we have to find alternate ways of doing almost everything. I put up a very funny website, if you really want to go down the rabbit hole, called Free Market, freemarketcurrency.com.
And, oh, great.
Yeah,
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, this is kind of a good best kept secret. Freemarketcurrency.com explains the idea of issuing a promissory note as currency, a private individual doing that. So I'm writing an IOU to you, and I have a gold coin, and I'm going to pledge my gold coin to you. But instead of exchanging the gold coin, we'll just pass around this pledge.
The paper.
As currency, yeah. And that's a complete bypass. It's the non-digital bypass on taxable, corrupt fiat currency. And
so
go ahead.
We had a website up for years called silverandgoldermoney.com.
Yeah.
Which is just like a currency calculator, and it'd go back and forth from 13 currencies in Bitcoin into gold and silver coins. So it would, let's say I said, I want to send Jerry $2,000 in euros, and it would tell me how many gold and silver coins and local coins I had to use to get you paid at an equivalent value.
Right.
And we lost it under very strange circumstances, and now we got a new team building it back, and we'll launch it next month. But what I always tell people, look, you don't need to do an organization. You don't need to write bylaws. Just start using your coins. Just do it. And that's what you're describing.
You have to just do it. Because what you're talking about, if you get too formal with it, then the SEC comes in and it's a currency exchange, you know, and it's regulated. So it has to be private activity between private individuals, harmless and consensual between those individuals. And then you're good to go. And I don't think people understand how much damage taxation is doing to them and how out of control it is. Now, I did a video about this where I said, let's calculate what the average earnings are and what the average government spending are so we know what our real tax rate is.
Right.
It was 122% of income.
Right.
That was the real spending rate at that time. And I could be off on my math by a little, or you would have far better math. But I found that if you simply divide the average earning rate by the average taxation rate, you're paying 122% of tax on your earnings. Of course, they say, well, I'm not paying 120. How's that possible? It's the borrowed money. So when they borrowing against your future earnings, and yes, it adds up to 122% of your tax every year, of your income every year. And if you don't pay 122% of your income this year, you owe that much more next year. So it's compounding. And so we're in crazy land,
Here's the interesting thing. And this is why when the tax paper is done, I want to share it with you. Because one of the challenges the central banks, essentially what you're seeing all throughout the G7 is the central bankers are taking control of the treasury. So now they're controlling monetary and fiscal policy. And of course, the big question is, how are the central bankers going to get everybody to pay taxes to the central bankers if there's no representation? Because we have this principle of no taxation without representation, right?
Right.
So one of the things I'm looking at is currently in the U.S. government, there is more money missing than the total debt.
Yeah.
Okay, so
how did they do that?
Well, the New York Fed is the depository for the U.S. government. Okay. So any money that goes in or out of the U.S. government, in theory, goes to the New York Fed and its member banks as agents for the New York Fed. So so you lever the government up with $30 trillion plus of debt, but then you disappear through the government through the New York Fed accounts more than $30 trillion. Now, what's interesting is if we assert ownership right in that $30 trillion, we're not in debt. Right? So okay. The question is, how do you identify and assert ownership of those assets? But in fact, if you could hold the New York Fed liability for all the money that's disappeared, you could offset the debt.
Now, how does this $30 trillion relate to the missing $21 trillion or $50 trillion? I mean, is this...
So up until 2015, there was $21 trillion missing.
Right.
It turns out in 2019, now that we have accounts for 17, 18, and 19, there's more. There was $35 trillion missing in 2019, and I have to go back and get the numbers on 17 and 18 and add those. But if you just add the 21 to $35 trillion, you're up to $56 trillion. And currently, the debt is at approximately $30 trillion of what's on balance sheet. I have reason to believe the off-balance sheet is much more.
So does that mean there's 50 some trillion missing here, 30 some trillion missing there, 80 trillion total?
So what that means is on the balance sheet, it says you have $30 trillion in debt.
Right.
Well, that's treasury debt. There's more kinds of debt. Right. And then there's 56 trillion of undocumentable adjustments. And what they can argue is, oh, well, that's just accounting transactions. It's not really cash. But I would argue, since they have yet to produce audited financial statements or follow the law, I presume it missing until they can prove to me how much cash is missing. And now
they have FASB to hide the whole thing, and
right.
There's no way to go back and really find out anymore, right?
Actually, there is always a way to go back and find out. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, because there's such a thing as train tracks. So money goes through the banks and financial train tracks, and the New York Fed as depository is legally accountable for all that money.
Right.
Right? So if you're a contractor to the U.S. government and you steal or misplace money, you can be held accountable, including I went through litigation with the federal government where I was held accountable under common law right of offset. So my litigation was as follows. They said that if our financial advisory team had not allowed a certain mistake by a subcontractor, we might have made, it was a very profitable deal, it was very successful, but we might have made another $3.8 million in addition to the $150 million, I think it was, that we made. And so they wanted to hold me accountable for that $3.8 million, and they asserted a common law right of offset against the money they owed me. Okay,
now,
let me go back to the New York Fed.
Right.
If you're missing $56 trillion from the New York Fed and its owners, the large New York banks, and let's say, so at the end of the litigation, at that point, the amount missing from the U.S. government was $14,000 per person. You know, I'd only found about $4 trillion at that point. So I, in fact, owed Citibank $14,000 on a credit card. I wrote them a letter and I said, I'm asserting a common law right of offset for the money you owe me as a taxpayer, $14,000 per person. I owe you $14,000 on my credit card. I'm asserting a common law right of offset. I'm going to call us even. If you have a problem with that, contact my attorney. Here's your name and number.
Because I'm declaring my offset against this money
right.
You've lost. Yeah.
So I'm declaring as a citizen the $14,000 is an offset against what I owe you. Right. We never heard another word from them.
Really? So you can offset. And that was, say again, what kind of debt that was?
Common law right of offset.
But that sounds like something they just contrived to give you a hard time. There's so many bureaucrats or
no,
whatever.
No, there is something called a common law right of offset. It really, look it up. It really works.
I don't doubt that. What I doubt is that they take any other average bureaucrat and administer those standards to them. I think they were singling you out because you're
a absolutely. If you look at the contract and the law, they had absolutely no right. And the Court of Claims, it was kind of miraculous, but the Court of Claims agreed with us.
Right.
So we won in that. We went after them in the Court of Claims and we won. Now, so I agree it was bogus in the way they applied it, but I think common law right of offset can be properly applied, and there may be ways, I'm hoping, to apply it in this instance, because if you look at all the money that's disappeared from the federal government, so let's just take that $56 trillion number. In terms of cash and hard credit, I don't know if that number is 10 trillion or 100 trillion. It could be either, depending on how much is how much funny business is on the other side of the balance sheet. But whatever that number is, Jerry, that money went someplace, and the place it went represents real assets.
Right. And when you say, how are we going to get our money back? I always say, you're not going to get your money back, but you actually can with an offset. And
right. And
I want that document on my website. I want it on your website and everywhere else. And hopefully, I mean, this over my head, but hopefully you can come up with something where you have some kind of template where people could say, based on certain kinds of debt or certain kinds of obligations, I have this right of offset, and here's my claim.
So the way we're writing this is, we're not going to answer. We don't know the best way to do this. This is going to take a much wider conversation of people who know the tax system and the law. But I want to start and help lead the conversation to figure out how we do this, because there has to be a way.
Right.
You can't just have to pay $2 trillion a year in taxes with no representation under the law. That can't be. And
right. And
the federal government since 1996 has violated all the laws related to financial management. It's incredible. And
right. And
they, we have an obligation as citizens to bring tax money back to lawful jurisdiction. So for example, we pay our taxes and then they use the money in ways which are illegal and criminal.
Right.
We have an obligation to say, wait a minute, that money is needed to do the lawful purposes. Let's get it back in the tent. My dream, what I used to dream of is creating escrows under state jurisdiction where everybody could fill out their tax form, send the documents, send their 1040 to the IRS, but then put the money in an escrow that had been authorized by the state. And it basically said to the federal government, here's a check for the military and here's a check for the public debt. And with respect to all domestic expenditures, there's no need for us to send it to Washington and you to send it back. We'll just take care of all that here.
Because we
need to make sure, we have an obligation to make sure the money is spent lawfully under the Constitution and under the law. Right. And you're managing it in ways that are criminal.
Right. Now, when you have $53 trillion, it's 60 some thousand dollars per man, woman, and child in the USA.
When you have 21 trillion, it's 65,000 per person. When you have the money that went missing during the Trump administration took the missing money to a whole new level.
Right.
Now, it keeps getting worse every administration.
Right. Right.
But FASB 56, I thought, Jerry, would end the undocumentable adjustments. But they got FASB 56 in 2018, and bam, in 2019, $35 trillion missing.
Well, sure. I thought FASB 56 enabled them to do that, pretty much.
Right. But I thought it would enable them to do it secretly. They didn't have to announce they were doing it. I don't think they had the system up and running 2019 sufficient to get it working.
Getting back to the $53 trillion, so now we're into real
money. $56 trillion.
Yeah.
That's over 120,000 per person.
Okay, thank you. So the 120,000 is obviously not something that anybody has. Most people have the capability of ever writing a check for $120,000 to settle up this debt. And there's obviously legal questions as to whether or not they're obligated for that, because they obviously have no party in creating that debt.
Right.
But, and that's why maybe the offset would work. And so without the offset, like you're talking about, or without some mechanism to forgive or jubilee that debt, we're in end days. We're just going to be absorbed by China.
So we're in days where somebody can say, well, you know, the country's in this debt, so we can take your assets because your assets basically...
But most people's assets would not fulfill the $53 trillion. You know, they now have debt beyond the actual asset capacities of the general public.
Well, but they would be sufficient to claim ownership of all the assets in the country. If you include the national parks, the resources, blah, blah.
But you're saying this is an excuse to take everybody's stuff. I agree with you there. That obviously is the kind of thing they do. We see this every day. What I'm saying is that even if they did that, it wouldn't satisfy the $53 trillion, and sooner or later that'll be $100 trillion and $200 trillion.
Right.
You know, so they don't have a way to resolve this without offset.
Right.
Without something like
now,
that.
Now, what I will tell you, and here's the little trick in this whole thing in terms of money. The little secret here is if you look at how the government money works, so if you take the entire federal budget and credit mechanism, it's run on a negative return on investment. In other words, it's a productivity destruction machine. It's designed to centralize power, but not to optimize economic performance. And so if you take a county, I did a study in 1996 that I presented to a group of the top pension fund leaders. If you take a county, you're spending an enormous amount of money designed to make everybody in that county sicker and stupider. Okay?
In what way? Just clarify that. How are we making them sicker and stupider?
So for example, at the time, I had started a company that could take people off welfare, teach them data servicing, and get them working as productive taxpayers. And what I discovered in doing the economics of welfare to work was that the average worker on welfare that I was dealing with spent 35 hours a week just managing their benefits.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's 35 hours a week they could be doing something productive that was just a complete waste of time going back and forth in the 26-step process. And as they were doing it, their skills were getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And they were getting more and more frustrated. Anyway, so, but also you're feeding them. If you looked at the food subsidy programs that was sending them down to the supermarket to buy lousy food, you know, you were making them sicker and sicker. But what was interesting is you were using the safety rules to put out of business the small farmers in their area. And you could completely re-engineer the food process so they could eat very well at the same price.
Right.
You know,
right.
if you weren't trying to, you know, industrialize the food system. So all this centralization was causing either sickness or lack of productivity, but it was centralizing the control of the economy, as George H.W. Bush used to say, into tighter and righter hands. Okay,
yeah,
now, if you have a mutual fund that loses money every year, it keeps going down in value, right? That's a negative return on investment. And if you bring it whole every year by printing more money, you know, you're just pumping it up. And so it's a draining system. You're harvesting, you're centralizing, you're draining, but it's economically unproductive. So things feel, you know, like it could never work and blah, 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 blah. Now, here's the little secret. If you re-engineer the government money so that it has a positive return on investment, the potential for wealth, explosive wealth creation, is beyond belief.
But does that deny government its gravy train?
Absolutely.
Well, then who in government would be for that?
No one.
Yeah.
No one in government of any, you know, but more importantly, the guys at the top. Because the harvesting system is fantastically successful at both centralizing power and instituting control.
Right.
But it's very destructive economically. And if you're going to bring out big, powerful new technology, you feel safer because you're going to maintain complete control, and then you're going to be able to get all the wealth of the new technology that comes out.
So you have a way to transfer the whole, to switch the whole formula, top to bottom, bottom to top, where wealth accrues to the average citizen instead of government. I mean,
so wealth accrues to the people who create the wealth.
Exactly. So it's obviously fantastic. Everybody who reads the Solari report, everybody who pays taxes, everybody who's not working inside government should immediately today say, Catherine, how do we do this, and do it. But can they even do it at this point without the cooperation of government, who would be adamantly opposed?
So at this point, it's going to be much harder to do, but it is doable. There are two sort of oppositions. One is the people at the top, from everything I know about them, don't believe it's possible that the general population will take responsibility and act responsibly. Now, I believe if you bring responsibility and accountability down to a small enough local level, you can. But I don't think they, as risk managers, believe it. And now you've got a weirdness built into the group that is morally unacceptable to the general population. So there's some serious tensions.
Into what group? Into which group?
So right now I'll just talk about the U.S. establishment. I think the U.S. establishment is terrified of their liability. So let me give you an example. In 47, if you go to missingmoney.solari.com, you'll see a very detailed, we'll see a section on financial laws where I document all the different U.S. fiscal and monetary laws and basically lay out the framework for how the financial system works at the very top of the U.S. government. And what you see is, starting with the 47 and 49 Act and then executive orders since then and different classification laws, we have taken a greater and greater portion of the U.S. economy dark and secret. You know, it's the black budget. Right, right. There's a hidden system of finance, you know, at classification, and it's just gotten out of control now with FASB 56. Right. But apparently, and I'm told, and I believe this is true, but I don't know it for a fact, the leadership has sat down on numerous occasions and said, how could we, you know, the secrecy is very unproductive. The secrecy is very damaging. It's changing our societies in ways we don't like. How could we reduce the secrecy? And they go in and they study the liability issues and they throw up their hands and say, it's impossible. We can't. Right. We can't. We don't see a pathway to get to truth and reconciliation here because they've stolen
too long. Yeah.
Well, one, they've stolen so much money. But the other thing is, if you look at the technology that is being applied in our world that is invisible and the average person doesn't know about, I mean, you literally have become two parallel civilizations.
Yeah, yeah. And the one civilization that's hidden wouldn't even be believed by the others, many on the other side. That's why it's hard to get people. They say, well, what can I do? I don't even believe that what you're saying, you know, most people don't even understand the significance of the missing $53 trillion. Most people don't even know about that at all.
Right.
So, and if you told them $53 trillion, first of all, they say, I don't know what trillion means. And then they would say, if they did understand what $53 trillion means, they would say, well, that just sounds ridiculous. That's not possible.
And how do I describe this? I think where we are is, if you're you or you're me, how do we help people turn things around? Because essentially, if you look at the plan the central bankers are up to, if you look at the Going Direct plan, they plan to end human liberty and literally go back to a slavery system. And the biggest obstacle, the biggest strength that they're using to market, in my opinion, is what I call entrainment technology. Entrainment, subliminal programming. Since the 47 and 49 Act, they've invested a tremendous amount in using digital technology and telecommunications to literally mind control people.
Right.
And, you know, I knew about all this technology on the covert side. I mean, I didn't know a lot about it, but I knew about it because when I was on Wall Street, I heard two billionaires talking about rolling it out on TV. And it so scared me, Jerry, I went home and gave away my TV. That was it for me and TV.
Yeah.
I was like, God, this is terrible.
Yeah.
But when I became an investment advisor, I started doing investment advisory in 2007. I kept running into these situations where people were being tricked into private placement investments, and they'd clearly been marketed using entrainment technology. And it was horrifying because, you know, over here I could sell them something for a dollar, and over here they wanted to pay $1.25 for no reason, and I couldn't talk them out of it. And it was just like pouring money down the drain. And I came to the conclusion, okay, they're using entrainment to market this stuff over the telephone, sometimes over the internet. And that's when I started on the Salieri Report. I got one scientist to come on and explain entrainment and subliminal programming and how it works. But if you
But they're able to entrain to the point where you can't unentrain. You were unable to unentrain. So that's a key question. Is there a way to unentrain? And if there isn't, we kind of have to give up. I mean, without mass awakening.
So I believe that there seems to be approximately 5 to 10% of the population that seems to be relatively immune. So you seem to be relatively immune to it. I don't know why or how.
So far.
But to me, you've got to find a way for those 5 to 10% to organize and lead. And what I found is if the 5 to 10% are making headway, you know, some of the others will come back around behind and follow. So, but unless you can get that 5 to 10, now, my number one biggest obstacle with that 5 to 10% is they don't believe such technology exists and is operating.
Such technology as what?
Mind control technology.
Well, that's more than 5% that would not believe that.
No, but I mean, if you take a look at the 5 to 10% who seem to be not susceptible to it, it's been very hard for them to fathom that such technology really exists and is really being applied.
Okay, well, in a way, that sort of doesn't matter. I mean, what matters is, can any percent of us create something that unentrains?
Right.
Can any of us break through that barrier and start to, I would like to think that some of my videos have done that.
Yeah.
But I get affirmed by that once in a while. And if I can plug that, it's YouTube/MiniVanJack. And there's a series of videos there that talk.
Say that again. On YouTube.
YouTube.com/MiniVanJack. MiniVanJack, all one word. So the experience that you had, where you being very articulate, very intelligent, unable to unentrain people, worries me. You know, because that means we've got a high bar to jump. You know, but what is your theory on, if there is a way, what would it be? Could it just be through good communications? Could it be through tough love in communications, where you really deliver hard facts until, you know, repeat until people start to see it,
right,
like they do to us?
So I think you have to begin with the people who are relatively immune, because that's where you get your momentum.
Right.
But from then on, I think it's that the people who are relatively immune help the people who have been, I would say there's a wide amount of the population that can be swung back to sort of rationality, right, if they see some leadership from the 5 to 10%. But you have to engage with them in the practical day-to-day existence of their life. In other words, they don't want to hear that there's 56 trillion missing from the federal government. They want to hear, okay, here's what you need to know about this situation, and here's how you can take action and what you can do. So, for example, one of the things I've just pounded the drum on for the last 5 years at the Salieri Report is food inflation is going to get really, really bad. Right. Food as the game of economic warfare is going to get really, really bad. And you need to take action now to figure out how you're going to feed your family fresh, healthy food, because the day is coming when you cannot walk into the grocery store and you can't be sure that's real meat and you can't trust it. So
I think the day is here on that.
Yes.
I think we're on the up curve of what you're characterizing and have characterized as the food crisis, the food inflation cycle.
Right.
We're on the up curve now.
Right.
I'm right. seeing
yep. Right. And there are many subscribers we have who've been working on this for many years, you know, so they're prepared. And they can help lots of other people get prepared fast because they're prepared, you know, and they've been saying these things to their family and friends. So that's an example of meeting people where they are in the practical day-to-day existence. And over time, they can see the difference that it's making to the people who are doing it successfully. So success attracts. And I've seen that success both with vaccinations or fresh food or all these different issues really attract back to people who are, you know, who are swinging, you know, sort of in the middle and can be attracted back.
I think that's the key where you see enough pain starts to develop from the inflation, right. from the lack of nutritional quality in foods. Enough pain develops from that, while at the same time, more of us, 5% or whatever, are getting information and providing examples. So there is a breaking point, a tipping point on that, I think.
Right. It's a but the 5%, it's not just providing information. It's seeing that they, whatever they're doing is working for them. So when people see other people adapting and evolving successfully, they say, okay. So I'll give you a funny story. I had a relative. I live in Hickory Valley, Tennessee. I'm in the Netherlands right now, but my home base is Hickory Valley, Tennessee. When I first got to Hickory Valley, Tennessee, I had a cousin who didn't want to hear any of this, you know, and they just wanted to go with the official reality and they didn't want to know. Finally, one day, I'm sitting at my desk in the living room and my cousin walks in. She slams the screen door open and she says, I get it. She says, you know what's going to happen before it happens. I told her husband's name was Billy. She said, I told Billy this morning, she always knows what's going to happen before it happens. And so I figured out how we're going to get along. She says, what you're going to do is you're going to tell me what to do. Just you tell me, start doing this. So a year from now, you've got this covered. But here's the secret. I don't want to know why. I don't want to know why I'm doing it. I just want, just tell me what to do and I'll do it because I know you know what's going to happen, but I don't want to know why. So she didn't want to hear an explanation that was outside of the official reality, but if I told her to take an action, she would do it.
So one more convert to Catherine Austin Fitz's message and Solari Report's message. But that's, how many people are like, okay, now I trust you, now I like you, now I know that you have integrity, but I don't want to hear all the bad news. I don't want to be depressed by what you know.
Right, but people want to know what actions they can take. So if you come into our website, up on the right, it says, who's your farmer, who's your sheriff, who's your banker, where's your money? You know what I mean? Yeah. So what I tell people is the human civilization that you want, you have to finance. You have to shop in it. You have to support it. You have to get, you know, a couple, many years ago, we had a huge food fight in my county and they got a new sheriff elected. They got a real good guy elected sheriff and it was a huge food fight and what a difference it made. You know,
what do you mean by food fight?
It was a real example of the responsible local business people and citizens getting together and organizing to put a new guy in who would run it much cleaner.
So the system's trying to fight you on reform,
right.
And you're trying to create reform. So there's the fight.
You know, right.
And that's everywhere. That's you right. have to deal with everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that's why, to me, you've got to bring the 5% together and support them. And then you can draw people in behind them first and foremost.
Right. Well, so I think, yeah, go ahead.
One of my favorite radio show hosts used to say, our circumstances are far too dire for the luxury of realism.
The luxury of realism.
Yeah. So my take on all of this is that death is not the worst thing that can happen. So I always believe there's a way. That's one of the reasons I've always loved your work. Because you're just a way maker. You're just creating ways. And I don't, you know, I'm, I don't care. I refuse to believe that anything is hopeless. I'm an optimist, and I really think these guys are going to kill each other and fail. I really do, and it's contingent on the rest of us to have a plan when they fail.
Right. Well, I'd like to know what their failure looks like, because to them, that's not even remotely possible. They've been accruing power and wealth for so long. They say, how are you ever going to get up this hill? Most people agree. They say, I don't know what to do about this. And it is a gradual process. I mean, like you say, I think we just have to take it one aware person at a time, and try to create examples, try to make things that work, and try to create alternatives. You know, but of course, every time we do that, they're going to come back and hurt us one way or another. And I think there's you have a few people I know have good enough strategic mind to say, here's how we can continue driving the wedge, and they can't really do anything about this. And that takes very strategic thinking. And, you know, I always try to think that way, but, you know, who knows? Certainly you have done far more than anybody I know, created a media platform, you know, created so much good content. So, you know, there is hope as long as we're alive, I guess.
Well, here's the thing. You can go along with the system or not. And if you look at where the system's going, it's far worse than what can happen if you fight.
Oh, yeah.
So to me, this is easy. You've got two pathways. And the remarkable thing that just drives me crazy about this whole thing is if you look at who's building our prison, it's us.
Yeah, yeah. That's the problem. And how to get people to see that they are doing that, and to see what that prison actually looks like, because they don't know, and they're sitting in it saying, look how free I am. And if you're free, can you own property without paying taxes on the right to own property? Can you travel without paying taxes on the right to travel and get your license to do that? Can you keep all of your income, your earned income, and determine who where to dispense that, or does the IRS help you with that? You know, on and on. But one of my big objections, I consider property tax worse than income tax, because property tax.
Yes, it is.
There's no justification for that. I have a right to own property, and I need a space to occupy as a human being, and I have a right to do that. And when you have a right, you can't tax that. You can't infringe on it. So how do you tell someone? I mean, I can understand an excise tax, I can understand a value added tax, but a property tax, simply exercising the right of owning property, and where am I supposed to get the money to pay that? You know, you have a house, it's not producing income. You have to go out and earn money to pay for that.
That's slavery. The entrance to the treadmill. Right.
Yeah. Property tax. And so we have a lot of those things. And, you know, I saw a list somewhere of how many taxes we have. It's just hundreds of taxes, you know. So I don't know where to start.
Okay, well, Jerry, when I finish this document, I'm going to, if it's okay, I'm going to send it to you.
I'll share it, promote it, and make a video about it. And invite you on to talk about it if you wish.
Oh, I would love, you know something? I would love to talk with you about this.
Oh, you're invited on Minivan Jack channel any day.
Okay, I would love it. Okay, now before we close, I want you to go through your websites again, but specifically I want you to tell people, can we sign up for email updates? How do we stay in touch, and how do we support your work?
Okay, I don't do email blasts. I'm nowhere near the media mogul you are with all of this connectivity that you have. Right. I'm one guy, and I have a couple of websites, and I update them once in a while, and I upload videos to youtube.com/minivanjack, and that's pretty much my whole operation. So the best way to keep in touch is just to check back with Minivan Jack. Now you can on YouTube, you can subscribe and get alerts. I'm not sure in the shadow banning how well that works, but it's good to check back once in a while. Usually if I have some new big news, I do it on one of my videos, and then I'll watermark in the video, go to freedomtaker.com, go to, I have another website, emfhelpcenter.com, which is about electromagnetic frequency problems people have. That's a big problem now. So the videos on YouTube, now I'm getting shadow banned, I'm getting censored, so I'm now starting to migrate to BitChute and other, you know, I'm looking for viable platforms. And even when YouTube's shadow banning me, I get more views on YouTube than anybody else. So, you know, I'm just trying to keep as much presence as I can. But I'm sort of migrating to Jerry Day. The Minivan Jack was a joke. You know, that was whatever, 15 years ago. And I said, oh, they're a YouTube channel. Minivan Jack, you know, it was a joke, and I just thought I'd goof around with it. Well, I got stuck with that. You know, I believe in a full disclosure, and I'm Jerry Day, and I'm going to be putting that on my video. I always do a little quick watermark of my name on the video. So that's a searchable thing in answer to your question, Jerry Day, or Minivan Jack, or freedomtaker.com, or emfhelpcenter.com.
Okay, definitely everyone, go to FreedomTaker and check out the would you call them notice of liabilities?
Yeah, notices, there's vaccine notices. The notice of liability you can do for vaccines, but you can, I kind of created that for the electromagnetic, the smart meter, the radio frequencies, the notice of liability. So you tell your utility company, you know, it's like a conditional acceptance, because most people don't have the money to create an off-grid solar system, so they're dependent on their utility company, and they can't refuse the meter. So they say, okay, I accept your meter on the condition that you're fully liable for all damage you cause. That's a notice of liability, and we have that at EMF Help Center for smart meters, and we have similar ones and more specific ones for vaccines at freedomtaker.com.
Right. Okay.
And a lot of other stuff at freedomtaker.com, how to deal with an obstinate census taker that won't take no for an answer and thinks they have every right to ask you any personal question, like how often you go to the bathroom or who you buy insurance from. You know, I'm sorry, census taker, there's no constitutional authority to do that. Here's how many people live in the house. Have a nice day. Goodbye. You know, so we have a form that warns the census taker, here's the law. You know, this is what you need to do. We have forms for a number of different things, but obviously recently vaccinations is a big one. A lot of people contact me and go, oh my God, mandatory vaccines. You know, that's when they know what vaccines do, it's go, that's really a rock and a hard place. I don't want a vaccine for any reason, you know, many people. And so, you know, we empower them to, you know, deal it with these people, on your terms as a person who has rights.
Now, I just have to ask you this question I'm dying to ask. Are you the guy who figured out how to install a solar system on your property?
I didn't figure out how to do that. It's kind of technical. You need an electrician at some point, and I'm not an electrician. But I did find out, I have a document at freedomtaker.com on off-grid solar that gives you a lot of tips, because there's some big pitfalls. And one of the things I recommend is never go with these full service solar companies. Right. They charge double, they add commissions, they want to loan you the money and charge you interest. You wind up paying at least double for your system. What you would do if you get a little bit DIY with it, there's a company I like called wholesalesolar.com, where you call them and you say, this is about how much electricity I want to use. And they go, great, you need these many solar panels, this inverter, this charge controller, this many batteries. Here's your system. Here's a wiring diagram for your electrician. Everything you need, and you hire an electrician hourly, and it doesn't go out of control on you on cost there. And I got lucky. I found a guy who knew something about solar and who was a great guy, high integrity guy, and super multi-talented. You know, he was helping me with, he did construction on framing my cabin that I build out in the country and all kinds of stuff. So His name, by the way, is Tyler Siggins, and I want to give him a plug. And he, but that's what you want to do, is you want to just take a little time and learn a little bit. If you go to freedomtaker.com and find that document, Off-Grid Solar, it's a free download. That sets you in motion toward knowing how to plan your solar system without having these terribly disastrous problems that can arise. You know, it's a big investment. It's $12,000 to $30,000, right, investment put in a solar system, and so if you don't do something right, it really hurts. And so,
and are you glad you did it?
Every day, every day. I say, I don't have a smart meter. I don't have a bill from a power, right, company. I don't have people coming on my property with their trucks or with whatever, or sneaking on to read the meter. You know, no, it suits me. Now, not everybody. I think everybody has different, you know, I just like to pay my bill and not worry about anything. Okay, fine. But for me, I don't have an electrical company that has any authority to step foot on my property.
Right.
And I live out in the country, and I have 20 acres, and most of it is vacant, undeveloped land, and I like it, you know, private and secure. And
well, and here's the thing: do it yourself is the greatest tax shelter in the world.
Oh man, yeah. Everything you do with Federal Reserve notes is heavily encumbered with taxes. And yeah, out on the property, I can build things, and I've gone a little bootleg on some stuff. But you know, when I live in a county, California, Riverside County, they're not good at inspections and permits. They cost a lot, and I have a restaurant that I was waiting to open nearby that took them 2 years just to get the county to come and inspect and approve and permit. And they were doing it all right, and they were trying to cooperate. 2 years it took, right, them to get their permits. If I had done that kind of nonsense when I occupied my land, I would have been living in a trailer still. You know, I literally did that. I moved on, probably lived in a trailer for 6 months while I built a cabin to live in. And but years ago. And so I would still be in a trailer if I was trying to deal with the county and doing permits. It's the bureaucratic mess.
Well, did they save you from opening a restaurant in front of COVID-19?
It wasn't my restaurant. It was not mine. It was just a place. I live in a place where we have like three restaurants, and two of them are Mexican food and one is pizza. And I'm going, you know, I've listened to Catherine Austin Fitz. I know what kind of food is good for me.
Right.
And I need a little variety. And here was a restaurant opening, an Asian restaurant, fresh cooked wok food, you know,
wow,
or Thai, okay, restaurant. I thought, boy, we need that. Took 2 years for them to get that open. But I was over there encouraging them all the time, and they finally got it open. It's a terrific place called Taste of Asia in ANSA in Southern California. But the lesson was, what a nightmare when you go through, you're just trying to do the right thing, and the county just punishes you and delays you, and it's like, you know, they've got to really get their act together. And that's one of my next projects, is to show up and pound on the podium at the County of Riverside and say, you guys cannot do this. You know, you've destroyed so many businesses with the lockdown, and now you've got this permit problem that's been going on for way too long.
Actually, it's very efficient. They're making life safe for the big franchise restaurants.
Making life safe with the, oh yeah, they've done more for big business and big box retail and everything than,
right,
you could ever imagine.
It's a giant sucking sound into the stock market.
Yeah. They've destroyed millions of small businesses, which will never reopen. It makes me want to cry. But I was howling on my YouTube channel about the lockdown from the beginning. It's like, this is going to be one of the worst financial disasters we've ever seen. And it certainly is, if you look at the numbers. I'm sure you could give us some numbers to support that. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to send you something. We did something called the Going Direct Reset, where we proved that this was a takedown. It was not.
Yeah.
You know, this,
right,
is a takedown.
Oh, as, yeah.
But
you
knew that on day one, Jerry. Yeah.
Well, you can feel it. It's like we had Ebola, we have tuberculosis, we had AIDS, we had SARS. They never made me wear a mask for any of that. You know, so something's up with this.
Anyway, okay. Well, Jerry Day, it was a pleasure to finally have a chance. I can't say meet you in person, but almost in person.
Pretty close.
And I will send you our Holding the Central Banks Accountable, and we're in cahoots.
Thank you. And you are a major source of my whatever I think and know. So thank you for all that you've done, far more than anybody I know. So it's great to talk to you and meet you, and hope to again soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.